And so we went to work and we tried to follow him. Kelly would go into villages at night. Nobody flew at night in Vietnam in those days. Single engine aircraft at night over enemy terrain, it didn't happen except with us, except with dust off. He would go into the villages to pick up their wounded and the patients, and the whole village would turn out to see him. He was becoming very famous. There was a Pulitzer author that was there and who followed Kelly and was writing about him. In the meantime, Stillwell's still trying to get through the paperwork to take those birds away from us. So he gets called on a mission one day to go in and pick up some wounded. And he got to the ground, and they call it a secure area. And I'm sure you guys who flew in Vietnam knew about secure areas. They would whisper into the radio, "Dust off, come on in, it's secure." Now, somebody shot those guys, and he's still somewhere around there, so we didn't pay any attention to that. We just found a way to get in there. So he hit the ground, and they came under fire, and they started screaming at him, "Get out, get out, get out." And Kelly's last words before he took a bullet through the heart was, "When I have your wounded." That set the standard for dust off to this day. To this day. And so after Kelly's death, I went in. I remember every minute of that day. We were in Saigon. We got the call that Kelly was down. I didn't wait for a co-pilot. I jumped in a bird, cranked, and I headed down there. And on the way, we heard that Kelly is out. And I was chuckling to myself because he had to be picked up by a slick. And I pulled into Vinh Long, pulled behind one of our pilots, Ernie Sylvester, and he's sitting on the edge of the bird, and he's crying. And so I said, "Ernie, they got him out, right?" And he couldn't talk. He just pointed to the body bag and behind him, and he said, "That's Kelly." He was dead. So then a guy comes to us, and he says, "The patients that Kelly went to get are still out there. Go get them." So Ernie and I jumped in, cranked up, and we went back. I can see the area so clear in my mind to this minute. Kelly's aircraft is destroyed. When he was shot, he flinched, and the blades hit the ground, and it beat the aircraft up. Didn't kill anybody else on board. There was a physician on board, broke his leg, but they all got out alive. And so there's his bird there, and we're going into the same spot, and they fill us with holes. And so we jumped over the tree line to check and see if we were flyable. We were back in, only this time we went in smart. We made a tactical approach into a little square of banana trees, and we got them all out. And the patient that Kelly went to pick up and was killed getting was an American GI going an R&R. He wasn't a serious patient at all. And that would not have bothered Kelly. He would have picked up anybody anytime for any reason. But he set the standard. Stillwell, that was the end of it. Westmoreland then came in country. Stillwell wept at Kelly's funeral. I was a pallbearer. It was one of the biggest funerals I've ever been in Saigon. And Stillwell broke down and started to cry. But anyhow, Westmoreland then said that's the end of that, and we started bringing more dust-off aircraft in country. But that's Charles Kelly. His death was probably the greatest lifesaver in the history of warfare.
The term dust-off, does anyone know where that term originated? Where?
Yeah, as you guys who have flown in combat and been in combat, you know you have your SSI, SOIs that have a call sign that's changed every day for combat operations. Well, one operation that they were on before Kelly got there, actually, they decided they would give the medevac call sign dust off because it raised a lot of dust in those fields around in Vietnam in the dry season. And so they called it dust off. And there were so many patients that day that it became easier to just keep that so that when somebody was hurt, we had a dedicated frequency too, which was unusual. When somebody was hurt, they would just yell dust off, and everybody immediately knew throughout Vietnam that that was a request for medical help.
Talk about your crew, the guys in the back.
Yeah, we were a four-man team, pilot, co-pilot, medic, and crew chief, and it took all four of us to get the job done. And the finest enlisted soldiers that I've ever been around were the helicopter crew chief and the medic. They were, many of them got to Vietnam without any experience in combat at all. In fact, our pilots, my second tour, came right out of flight school. Right out of flight school. There was no orientation. There was no nothing. We went to work picking up patients in combat. All their names started with an S, and they all thought they were handpicked to fly dust off. They thought they were the best in their class, and so they were. But their names started with an S, so that kind of took that out of the. They just grabbed somebody in the middle of the class, names with S, and they gave them to me to take to Vietnam. I'm not a big fan of experience, frankly. I think caring is more important than experience. If a guy cares to do a good job, if he wants to do a good job, he will do a good job, and these guys certainly cared. I could tell you stories about those enlisted guys, and they built an area there, an incredible area. They showed us an open field, and they said, that is your home. Put up, pitch some tents. Well, they didn't pitch some tents. They built hooches. We had flushing toilets. We had hot water showers. We had a library. I had to lie about the number of people we supported to get that library, but we got it. We had our own little zoo, monkeys and geese and dogs and everything. And those guys did it all. Rock face building where they had actually had a pool table and a bar and a steam cabinet, if you can believe that, in that weather. But they were multi-talented guys, and we're talking about 40 men in the whole unit, 40 men.
What were the average ages?
We had teenagers flying with us. And so I would say most of them were just in their late teens or very, very early 20s. But just they just took to the life-saving thing. They just took to that. There's no experience in life that I can think of that's greater than, and I apologize to my wife for saying this, but nothing in life is greater than saving a life. I mean, it's just very hard to describe, but to overcome obstacles, to get into an area, to get somebody who's going to die if you don't get in there, and to get him to a hospital and know that his life has been saved, it's just so exhilarating. And the people who flew with us, the enlisted guys, they just took to that. It meant so much to them. And I could tell you story after story about the heroism of those guys.
Nancy Brady. Nancy, would you just wave or stand for just a moment? This is Patrick Brady's wife, Nancy.
Now, it was because of her, as a side story, that I actually came in the Army. I was coming out of high school. She went to an all-girls Catholic high school. I went to an all-boys Catholic high school. I'm coming out of high school, and I got several offers to go play football at some universities around the Northwest and Oregon. But I was stalking this foxy chick at the same time. And she was going to a university that didn't have a football team, but it had ROTC, and the damn thing was mandatory. And I said, they can't do that to me. They cannot make me put on that silly uniform. They can't. Well, they could, and they did. And because I was not going to, she had a kind of a wandering eye, and I didn't want her alone in that university, and so I followed her there, and that's what got me into ROTC, and that's what got me in the military, and I hated every minute of it when I started out.
How can you describe what it was like for the families of those of you who were over there doing what you were doing? I can't imagine pressure,
yeah.
Call it what.
And this is another thing I would give to you veterans. Of course you've got to take care of your fellow veterans. Of course you do. You have to elect people that are going to do that. And you have to campaign for people who will do that. But you also have to remember their families. You know, I've been almost dead a bunch of times, but I never went through anything like I went through when my little girl was in the invasion of Iraq. She was a second lieutenant, Medical Service Corps officer in the invasion of Iraq, and I was in the Philippines inspecting cemeteries, and I got the word that the invasion was on. She was in it, and the television and media is telling us that we're being ambushed, we're running out of fuel, we're out of ammo, they're kidnapping our people. I was going nuts trying to, I was not there to take care of my little girl. Finally, I got Fox News and an embed, and they said, oh, we're kicking her ass, And so then I felt better. But the experience that I had is an experience that we didn't realize that those people we left behind us when we went into combat, that they were having. We didn't talk about what we were going through over there, most of us, so they didn't know at home unless they watched television, saw that. But what those families go through and experience, not just in combat, when those kids come back with PTSD and we got 65 of them committing suicide every day, that's horrible, just absolutely horrible.
Let's go to January 6, 68. You get a call. What happened?
Yeah, I was not on duty that day. The country was alive with casualties. It was really a hot time of the year. It was just a short time before Tet in January of 1968, and the things that were killing our pilots over there was night flying and night weather flying. Weather any time, it was killing more of our pilots than the enemy were. And I had found a couple techniques whereby we could fly in the weather, 00 weather in the day and 00 weather at night. As I told you that how important courage is for our young people to understand that, you know, it's the one way we're all born equal and we can have all we want. Well, the key to courage, in my judgment, is faith. So when I would get in trouble, I'm asking the good Lord to show me how. And one day we get a call to pick up a kid who's on a mountaintop. In the afternoons, the clouds came down to about 500 feet. In the mornings, you had the low valley fog that was about 500 feet thick, and it was like a snowbank. And so I went out to get this kid, and I started straight into the stuff. I knew that if I got in trouble, I could fall into the valley and I would break out. And I got in trouble. I started up, fall out two or three times, and they're screaming at me, dust off, he's going into convulsions, please, please come. I didn't know what the hell I was going to do. And all the time I'm praying, you know, God, why are you doing this to me? Show me how the hell to get in there. And so the crew was nervous too. And I said, okay, guys, you're going to do it one more time. I back around, up into that stuff. And I always flew with my window open so I could see out better. And a gust of wind hit us and blew us sideways. And I thought we were going, and I was totally disoriented. I looked out the window, and I could see the tip of my rotor blade, and I could see a treetop about 20 feet out there. So guess what? I knew I was right side up. I then knew how I was going to get that kid out and any kid in that stuff from that point on. That wind was the breath of God. I turned that sucker sideways, powerful H model Huey, hovered up the side of that mountain, into that area, got the kid, and got him to the hospital, and I understand that he lived. So ever after that, and that was the essence of the actions of the day of the Medal of Honor. Only then it was low valley fog. All I had to do was find a spot where there was a trail or something that would lead me into the area where the patients were, turn it sideways, keep two, as you pilots know, the tip of the rotor blades, the top of the trees. You couldn't go much faster than a little jog, but you could work your way through that stuff. Perfect safety. The enemy couldn't see you. There was no risk to it hardly at all, and you could go into that weather, and I preferred it because they couldn't shoot at me in that stuff very often. And so that was it. I'd use that technique on the day that I got the medal. They saw it for the first time, and somebody wrote it up. They were sitting on a mountaintop here, and the fog was down here, and they saw us come up out of the fog with the patients, and we made four trips in and got all the patients out. They say 51. We actually got more than 51 from that one area. We probably got 80 or 90 patients that day, which was not an unusual amount